today we get 2 hours of Scott.
Excited
good
about
or bad
it.
We got 2 hours with Scott.
We're going to talk a little bit about inflation. We're going to talk about sound money. We're going to talk about the history of the Federal Reserve and history of money in the U.S., what the Constitution has to say about it. And I even got some little props here. They're going to be fun to you guys can't see them, but we're going to talk about them.
Okay.
I have a $20 bill that was printed by the Federal Reserve 1934, the year after we went off the gold standard. It has an interesting little note on it.
Okay.
I have a gold certificate, some silver certificates, and I got a dollar today. So we're going to talk about the legal tender law. When it came into effect, what it means, and got a whole bunch of things we can talk about today.
And calls are always welcome, 522-8255. So your comments, questions, suggestions are all welcome here this morning. So, geez, where do we start? Do you want to start?
I'd like to just start real quickly with just where we're at debt-wise. And I tried to pull up the U.S. debt clock. And for whatever reason, their site's down. But I know, and like you said, probably the problem is it's accumulating so fast they can't keep up with it anymore. It isn't physically possible. But anyway, last time
like
I 14, checked, 14.3 14, is what 3. I hear, and we're getting ready to raise, or we're debating raising. I think there's little doubt in anybody's mind that we're going to raise the debt. But I think that we should get something out of it if they're going to do it. You know, I really think that they should start trimming back this government. Just continually raising the debt is not really accomplishing anything other than indebting ourselves and future generations to a bill that we can't pay. But just to kind of give an idea to the voters and listeners out there, where you know how far we've come just in the last 2.5 years, the debt has gone. And so this was in September of 2008 when they were debating the TARP, when Bush was going out and Obama and McCain were running for president.
And the TARP, in a nutshell, was going to do what?
That was going to provide a Band-Aid or a bridge loans to banks that were threatening to go under. So that was that big banking bailout bill of the September. It was about $700 billion when it started. It ended up being closer to $850 billion, $860 billion. That was the one where Paulson and Bernanke went to Congress on bended knee and said, hey, we're going to have a catastrophe of epic proportions if we don't do this. It basically, you know, provided the money to give to banks that to shore up all these bad loans that they had made, or that, better yet, that the Fannie and Freddie and all the different lending institutions had done on mortgages. And so, anyway, at that time, that was 3 years ago, or will be 3 years ago. So, you know, 2 years and change, really. Yep. We were at $9.6 trillion. So now we're at $14.3 trillion. So we added over 50% of the accumulated U.S. debt in the history since we became a nation till now. We've added over 50% to the debt in the last 2 years
two and
change.
Half years,
yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
So that doesn't speak anything to the unfunded liabilities that we have out there, which is Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security,
pensions,
those big entitlement
not
programs.
Even pensions.
Oh, it doesn't include pensions.
Doesn't include pensions.
And it doesn't include state pensions. Doesn't include any state debt or state bonding. Doesn't include any personal debt that we have. This is just the unfunded liability on commitments that we've made on social programs.
Okay.
And that's I heard yesterday that's somewhere between $61 billion and $64 billion are the two numbers I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
But the U.S. debt clock, last time I looked at it, had a different number. It had close to $100 billion worth of unfunded liability. Regardless, whether it's $61 billion on the low end or $100 billion, I heard it works out to every household about $500,000 worth of indebtedness. I don't know about you, but I don't have $500,000 I can cough up.
No.
So we've got some serious problems, and I think before you can solve a problem, you got to know what caused the problem. And at one time, we had the most sound currency in the world. The U.S. dollar was thought to be as good as gold, and there was a reason for that, because in reality, at one point, it was as good as gold. And if I think before you start having a discussion like this, you need to know what the Constitution, which is the basic framework, we've talked about this many, many times on this show, what the Constitution has to say about money and about the ultimate. How do I want to word this? The result of not having sound money. So that we need to know what the founders of the country and the Constitution said. And there's very little written, actually, about money in the Constitution. So it's extremely simple.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, we only find it in two different places. We find it in Article 1, Section 8, and Article 1, Section 10. So real quickly, I'm just going to read what it says in Article 8. Now, we've talked about Article 8 actually a fair amount on this show, because that is the section of the Constitution that gives the enumerated powers of Congress, the 18 things that they said, hey, this is what you can do and nothing else, because everything else, according to the 10th Amendment, is reserved. If it's not explicitly given to the federal government, it's reserved for the state government or the individual, which means you and I.
Okay.
So this is all it says about money. To coin money, regulate the value thereof of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weights and measures. That's it. It says to regulate, to coin money and regulate the value thereof. Now, it doesn't say it can give that authority to a private institution like the Federal Reserve.
Right.
It doesn't say that it can that it can do a whole lot of things. It just says it can do it. It doesn't even say that it can delegate that authority to another body. But it has the ability to coin money and regulate the value thereof. And then I think the two other things that are extremely important is it gives it the ability to value not only our money, but the value of foreign coin or foreign money, and then fix standards of weights and measures. And that means a foot is a foot, a pound is a pound, a pound has 16 ounces. And so that when we go to do commerce at the store, at the lumber yard, or wherever we go, that
everybody's on the same.
Yeah, we're dealing with the same thing. When you pump a gallon of gas, you know you're going to get 128 ounces. You're not going to get something else.
Right.
Because otherwise, the whole system starts to break down.
Right.
So I think, and there's other people a lot smarter than me, that if it's so important that we have a standard of weights and measures so that when we conduct business that we know that we're getting what we paid for, wouldn't it also make sense that we should have a fixed currency or a sound money system so that you know that a dollar is a dollar?
Right.
Otherwise, what is a dollar? And so, you know, we're going to spend quite a little bit of time on that. Now, the other thing I just want to read real quickly while I have the Constitution out is the Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution. And this is the only other thing that the Constitution says about money. It says, it says what other things the states shall not do. It says, no state shall enter into a treaty or alliance or confederation, grant letters of marque or reprisal, meaning it can't do business with foreign countries. It can't, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Okay, that's it. Now, what it says here is emit bills of credit. Now, bills of credit was the term in colonial days or in early American history was the term for paper money. They didn't want paper money. Paper money was a really scary thing because when we fought the Revolutionary War, we didn't have the resources of Great Britain. Obviously, they were the superpower of that era. Mm-hmm. We were a little pipsqueak bunch of colonialists sitting over here that wanted our independence. So how they financed the war is they printed currency, and it was called continentals. Instead of called dollars, they called them continentals. And there was a term that I've heard in my lifetime, and maybe you've heard it, and I'm sure some of the older listeners out there have heard it, but it's probably not taught in our schools much anymore, is that ain't worth a continental. And what that term meant was that the currency of that time frame wasn't worth anything because it wasn't backed by anything. It was total fiat currency. It was by edict that the federal government or the continental government, should say, or the Continental Congress, said that this money has value, but it was paper that was backed by nothing. And then as they needed more money to fight the war and pay script to the people who were fighting the war, the soldiers, they just printed more money. So after
so
a while—
So they were just like promissory notes?
Well, bills of credit, are really, basically that's what they are. They're promissory notes, and that's why they were called bills of credit.
Okay.
Now, at that time, banks also, people, you know, don't really know this, or a lot of people don't know it, is that independent private banks issued their own script too. So they issued their own money, and that was pretty common from the beginning of the country until probably the Civil War. And so it was buyer beware that...
Whose you were taking.
Yeah, you had to make sure that the bank was worthwhile because you put your money or gold and silver in the bank, and they issued you issued you currency,
okay,
their own currency. That was possible. And so that wasn't outlawed. And that happened around the country as well.
But at least that was backed by something.
Yeah, it was backed by something.
Well.
So anyway, after the war was over, there was so much disgruntled people because the people that when they mustered out of the military got paid in continental script, which was worthless. They couldn't buy anything with it. Nobody traded it. And in fact, the primary coinage of the day that was traded in colonial America and during the Civil War time was called the Spanish milled dollar. And it was a silver dollar. And what was really interesting about it is it was divided into eight pieces, right? If you looked, I wish I had one. If I ever get a chance to buy one, I'm going to. But it was a coin, and if you looked at it, it looked like
a scored.
Yeah, it was divided into eight pieces, like a piece of pie that's cut into eight pieces. And it was designed so that you could take a pair of shears and you could clip out pieces of this coin.
Okay.
And then that way, if you're buying a chicken or you're buying something else, you didn't want to pay the, and they didn't have change in those days, you would just clip out these little pieces. And,
wow.
And
that's, I never even heard of this. Okay.
And this is where the term 2 bits came from.
Oh, really?
So there was 8 bits in a dollar. You've heard that term.
Right.
2 bits for a cup of coffee, or 4 bits, or
See?
6 bits a dollar.
I didn't know where it came
from. Yeah. So that's
all
where it came from, was the Spanish mill dollar, is that 2 bits was a quarter, 4 bits was a half a dollar, and so on and so forth. So that was probably the most prominent piece of coinage during the Revolutionary War, was the Spanish mill dollar. And besides this colonial script, which was the dollar. So the founders were so afraid of paper money, mm-hmm, that's why they put into the Constitution that they wouldn't have paper money. It was going to be gold and silver. Now, I have a couple really interesting quotes that the founders said just to back this up. One is probably, if I can find it here, I've got so much stuff written down here. Probably my favorite quote is by one of the founding fathers. He's not a well-known guy, but his name was John Langdon from New Hampshire. And he said, "I would reject the whole Constitution if paper money is not barred." That's how serious these guys were. And if you look at other individuals like James Madison, he said, "The history that the money changers have used from every form of abuse, intrigue, deceit, and violent means possible to maintain their control over government by means of money and its issuance." Hmm. So these guys understood that without proper, underpinnings for our currency, a lot of bad things can happen. Actually, it's a property rights issue, because money, if you look at it in its proper term, is a commodity just like anything else. And in fact, there's, maybe I should back up just a little bit, and we should talk about the three types of money. There's really only three types of money in the world. There's commodity money, which is gold, silver, platinum, palladium. It can be cattle. It can be seashells. It can be a lot of different things over the course of time.
It's really something.
It was a commodity.
Yes.
And in fact, at one time, salt was even traded as money. And believe it or not, our term salary comes from the word salt. Like, you're not worth your salt.
Right.
You're paid your salt. You're getting your salt. That's where our English word salary is a derivative of the word salt.
Okay.
Because that stemmed from the fact that one time salt was considered money of some variety. So anyway, you had commodities. And over the course of time, gold and silver turned out to be the best commodities for money. Okay, typically, if you look at whether it be Roman times or during medieval England or wherever you go in the mm-hmm. world, gold and silver ended up being the best commodities for money. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first reasons are it's durable. It's, you can throw like gold and silver into the ocean for like those Spanish galleons. They sit down mm-hmm. there for 400 years. They bring them up, and guess what?
Still good.
They haven't lost anything.
That's right.
So they're extremely durable in terms of they don't corrode. Second of all, they're very malleable, meaning you can make all different sizes out of them. You can make small coins, big coins, little coins, bars. They're easy to make. They're easy to print. They're very hard to duplicate, assay-wise. People are, it's hard to counterfeit gold and silver. And probably the most important thing about gold and silver is that it's extremely scarce. I've heard that all the gold that has ever been mined, which most of it's still available unless it's at the bottom of the ocean or someone's hidden it or something, but the vast majority of gold is still on the surface and people know where it's at. And I heard that it would fit into an Olympic size or two Olympic size swim pools, one
or
the other.
I heard a pool.
A pool. Yep. So if you think about that, that's not really a lot of it.
Right.
It's extremely dense. And actually, there's less silver now in the world than there is gold, because silver has a lot of consumptive uses for industry, where gold typically isn't consumed other than in some specialty applications in the electronics industry. But anyway.
So we're going to let's take a quick break.
Okay, we'll do
it. We'll continue with Money Talk here on the morning show with Scott Sales. Any questions or comments? And if you have one of those mil dollar, bring it in. I want to see it, all right?